Welcome to Mornings with Monsters.
Good morning, adventurers. Today we are talking about the king of the lizards, the basilisk. And strap in a little bit because unlike the ones we're familiar with, these ones have legs.
They sure do. Yeah.
Unlike
Melina, you're our resident Harry Potter person, right?
I mean, I might be. I feel like it's probably between me and Alex. Alex is...
Fair enough.
If Alex...
Oh, no, you're like, a resident Stranger Things person. That's what it was. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I know more about Stranger Things. I'm guessing that Alex might know more about Harry Potter, like, if not his own knowledge, then by default because of his partner.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we get the other than the legs, the basilisk that is depicted in Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets is probably the closest representation of like the actual abilities and uses of a basilisk, other than the fact that it's slithery and doesn't have any legs.
Yeah,
but yeah,
makes me wonder if Salazar Slytherin would be down for the D&D version of a basilisk. You know what I mean? Like that dude kind of had like a hardcore fetish for snakes, and I'm not sure if he'd be down if it was like the king of lizards.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely almost want to look into it more if anyone knows a little bit more about why it got chosen to be this almost hybrid creature version. Like, because I don't know if it was, it's been a long time since I've read the book, but I don't know if it was a choice on the writer or if it was a choice on the movie people, on the movie effects.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but like most of the basilisks that I've read out outside of Harry Potter also are snakes and don't have legs.
Yeah, so
this is the first time I've been confronted with a legged basilisk.
Yeah, ever. Honestly, I didn't realize they had legs either.
Like, yeah, and maybe it was my own interpretation being wrong.
Yeah, they have 8 legs in the current edition.
I think that mostly what's out there is when you think of basilisk, you think of Harry Potter. That's just, it's kind of canonical, at least with people who are around our ages.
Yeah.
Because like Harry Potter literally is our generation.
Well, such like,
which I understand. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
yeah.
But like outside of Harry Potter too, like most of the fantasy that I've encountered a basilisk, Final Fantasy, like other franchises of fantasy books, they're all snakes as well, which is weird only because we've seen the artwork throughout our actual human history, not just D&D history.
Yeah.
And it's always looked like a legged lizard, which is interesting. You know what I mean?
So I don't know about like Final Fantasy stuff, but like depending on, because you have to remember like Chamber of Secrets, was that in the 90s or early 2000s? Like, I can't remember
It was like 2002 or 3, it was early somewhere 2000s. Around there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what I thought. But like, so when you think about that, a lot of like young fantasy novels, like, and stuff like that, probably any basilisks involved in that kind of like fantasy, it might have been inspired by like, oh, there's that, like that, you know, that creature I can use. So they don't even think to like maybe research it more, or they're like, oh, I like the way that they do it in Harry Potter. That's easier to write or use or whatever. Sure. Like,
I was reading stuff that came out before Harry Potter more than after it.
That was my other like question. So that's a like that. It might be the stuff that like she focused on. Or they focused on, whether it was, again, a movie or a book decision, I don't know. But yeah, either way,
it's an old information too, for you know, us. Like,
yes, yeah, it's very, very old, before 79 AD, because that's when Pliny the Elder passed, and he wrote about the basilisk, which if you guys don't know who that is, super famous historical like writer. He wrote an all-encompassing encyclopedia known as the
Natural History of the World.
Yeah, I think so. And it's like a set of books, and they're just very unhinged. Yeah, they're really unhinged, but like they were also considered like the authority on all things up until the Middle Ages. And we're talking about like ancient philosophers are going off these books and stuff. And he wrote about a basilisk. He also wrote about, you know, everything. And most of it, it's kind of like he wrote so much that it's kind of like 50-50. Like he got some stuff, just shots in the dark.
Rule of numbers.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's how you make progress. You just shoot the fucking as far as you can. Throw something till it sticks.
Yeah.
Make it till you make it, you know?
But some of it is like, if you're trying to cure your hiccups, stand behind an elephant. Like, it's like some real wild stuff.
Have you tried it?
No, but.
Can you say it doesn't work?
No. Right. But there's straight up spell components in like some of like the medicine he wrote about. It's like take the liver of a frog and the eye of a newt. Like,
that's pretty much normal life, right? Back then.
Yeah, no, for sure. But a lot of it was because of him. Anyways,
I like that.
I think
what
this
you're
was
saying
the
is he's the birthplace of witchcraft and natural history.
He's the birthplace of like entire scientific fields and like historians, like a lot of crazy stuff. Really,
it's crazy
really
that I've never heard of
podcast
this.
About
you could have an entire podcast about him.
That's cool.
He's really outrageous, and he only lived to 55, but he lived a crazy life too. Look him up.
When in history did he die? 55 sounds impressive, right?
He died 79 AD.
Oh my God!
Yeah, he made it, man. He was literally called the Elder because
wow, 55. That's a long time, dude.
Hell yeah, it is. I don't actually I think gonna... he died in Pompeii trying to rescue someone.
Shut up.
I swear to God.
It's fucking amazing.
He sailed a ship into the lava? Yeah, into the active, thing, trying to save someone.
But, who else would you... I mean, I would expect an unhinged writer to do something like that.
Yeah.
But also, and we're talking about, 55, you're old then.
Yeah.
Like, you're real old.
Yeah.
And he's still, into the unknown to save my buddy, or you know, what a man.
He's like nowadays 55-year-olds.
I was going to talk about the basilisk's like legged form being so like predating like our version of it being a snake, maybe because of the Bible.
Hmm.
A lot of the last bits of their revelation story talks about like a basilisk returning as shit starts to fall apart. Yeah. And I was just looking up those, like some iconography made because of the scene in Revelations, and almost all of those depictions have legs, wings, and a weird face. So actually it makes a lot more sense that the D&D ones are
legged
more accurate
than a snake. Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and the only point before I went off on my little tangent there was that the historians they believe that what he was describing was actually a king cobra, was the basilisk. So that's kind of like part of the reason why.
But he described them with legs.
Yeah.
Maybe a Komodo too?
From what it sounds like, they say it was a king cobra, but it also, like, the way he described it sounds like a large lizard, like a monitor lizard or a Komodo dragon or, you know, something along those lines.
I also have to imagine, like, as a 55-year-old, like, or as, like, living that life, I don't know at what point in his life he wrote the books, but, like, he probably saw a lot more than other people. So, like, the people who maybe, like, weren't sure what he actually thought it was back then.
Yeah.
Only had, like, this person had only seen a king cobra. They'd never seen anything else in, like, the lizard family. This person had only seen a, like, Komodo dragon. So, of course, they think that's what he's talking about. Like, kind of thing. It could have very much, yeah, we're gonna,
yeah,
it's very much,
it was probably a combination of things, and like he's writing about literally everything that you could think of. So like he may have even some things he wrote about twice and contradicted himself on the exact same thing. So
maybe that's what happened.
Honestly, you know. Yeah. And then
like maybe he saw like the King Cobra and started to write about it because of like where he lived. That's pretty common. You know what I mean? But then through his travels, like you said, he went to Pompeii, so he could have gone fucking anywhere.
Yeah.
Maybe he saw a Komodo dragon, was like, whoa, I could update this. You know what I mean? As like a variation of the form.
And they might have only had such a concept of like evolution. So like,
oh yeah,
maybe they maybe he's like, oh, maybe it evolved into this, like, and it's like, well, we didn't actually have the time to do that yet. But
I don't know if that word even existed in his
probably lexicon. Not. I don't know.
I'm like, it's wild.
He was born what, 25 years after Christ died. That dude, I feel, would be like in the perfect place of like pre-Christianity, but like post kind of like real hardcore, like beginning of times paganism, where like everything is connected and like you utilize like anything you can to live. Like Dylan said, he had spell components in his like first aid stuff. I really think that his perspective on the creatures he encountered is so unique because, you know, it would might be. His name once again?
Everyone calls him Pliny the Elder, but it's kind of spelled like Pliny.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're gonna have to put up some like links to him. On him.
Huh?
I want to build a D&D character around him.
Yeah,
that would be cool.
Like, you would think he would be very like problematic, but like, you know, and I'm sure he was, but he's credited for like so much. Like the natural history is crazy.
If he was a character and I was the DM for it, I would love to make him like be able to basically history check anything.
Yeah.
But you have to get like over a certain role to get accurate information on your history check. Otherwise, I'll just make up some weird shit that you would have been like, oh yeah, this thing does this, and it's like,
oh no, I mean, he was making
in your experience. Yeah, exactly.
It had to be.
Well, like I don't know if you guys realize this, but that's something like Svetla has capabilities of doing.
Oh, that's
like
fun.
History checking pretty much everything. Or anything, or insight checking pretty much everything or anything, because actually, she grew up in that temple.
Yeah, Lorne actually has the same ability for history stuff. Not insight, but I can pretty much know where to find any knowledge.
Yep, same.
And
so, if I,
all my characters anyway. Are dumb.
But speaking of Lorne, in relation to basilisks, I hope we never fucking find one because I'm dumb in practical ways and I could get easily petrified if my magical eye is out.
Oh,
because like, I do a magical eye spell so that like I can see much further than my motion range. And it is known that some magicians have gone petrified thousands of miles away because their eye caught sight of the gaze of a basilisk.
Yeah, and what I don't even think the basilisk has to be conscious of, like, seeing
That's the thing. No. That's, like, the really shitty part about fighting one is, like, unless you've gouged your eyes out or been blinded by chemicals or something like that, and you actually have no eyes, you have no physical eyes, even if you're blind and you have eyes in your sockets and you like gaze upon a basilisk, doesn't matter. You're fucked.
Interesting.
And, it's a weird reaction, right? Like if you guys found out that it's not like, it's not just like a magical effect taking place. It's like radiation mixed with magical effect.
Yeah. The gaze of stone or petrifying gaze is terrifying.
Yeah.
My next question would be, if a like ranger or druid or somebody was using beast sense
their eyes,
if they're seeing through
that's
them.
What it is.
Yeah. Yep.
So like if like Drew's one of our players is looking through Sunshine, like his familiar Sunshine's eyes, would both him and Sunshine get petrified?
That's how I would play it. Yeah, that's how, like, that's the thing, because it's two sets of eyes, right? Like, if my magician eye can petrify me, but it doesn't get petrified because it's magic, then I would assume that, like, if you're looking through a living thing with real eyes, you both would get petrified.
I'm gonna say yeah, that's what I would assume would happen.
I mean, I've been seeing like a consistent visual graphic of a beholder petrified to shit. So he doesn't even have to be in the space where he sees, and he can still get petrified. So if that thing can do it, I'm assuming it'll be easy. But I hear a cool thing is like, if you can turn yourself into gas, you can stop that.
Well, there you go. Druid's got gaseous form.
Yeah.
I turned my whole party into gas.
Oh, even better. So, like, that might be a real nice out if you've got a party-wide spell.
Okay, how many times have I tried to cast, like, Windwalk on my entire party, which just means that we all turn into a gaseous form and we can move, like, 60 miles and per whatever. Like,
one time, I think.
We always get talked out of it for some reason.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you've only done it one time.
Yeah, it's like, I only, because my party is very much so, like, we're going to fight over anything else. But, like, it's kind of my, like, it's my, fuck, we're leaving, we're getting out of here, and they can't stop us.
Yeah,
it's like, we're just in the wind.
Yeah.
Like, I imagine if we were in, like, the cavern of a dragon, and, like, we were cool to fight it, but then a second dragon comes slithering out. Let's go. We're out of here.
Can I, as a druid, using like a gaseous form or windwalk, can I turn a petrified player into gas or into it, that? Like, can I turn them into a gaseous form?
If you're, because it has to be a willing creature
you roll a save if you're not a willing creature.
My understanding of petrification is that, like, really the only reversal is like a, what is it, revivification or something like that?
Yeah, revivification.
But I do know for a fact that in D&D mechanics, when you are petrified, you do not lose consciousness. You can't see, hear, or breathe.
Thank goodness.
Taste and feel, all of that stuff is gone, but your mind remains intact. So,
oh, never mind.
So let's say Stampy. Yeah. You might be able to do it if you have a mind link. Plus, like, let's say Stampy, right? You consistently wear your Cloak of the Ray, right?
Yeah, I actually can't take it off now.
Now you can't take it off. That actually works in your benefit if you ever get petrified, because you only have the amount of air that you get petrified with. So, like, me,
oh, gotcha,
as a human, my lungs are full, and I get petrified until that runs out. I'm alive and good. But if you have your Cloak of the Manta Ray on, you don't need to breathe, right?
Correct. Or so at least I can breathe underwater. So I'm assuming the same thing.
I think a lot of those underwater magical items allow you to breathe while petrified without actually breathing. But you're going to have to take some, I don't know if it would be constitution saves, intelligence saves, or wisdom saves after like two or three rounds, because you're going to start going insane.
Well, yeah, I'm already insane, and I'm bad at all those checks, so.
True.
Like, unless it's strength or charisma, I'm fucked.
But if I were DMing and Sev wanted to mind link to Stampy while he's petrified with his Cloak of the Manta Ray, he can still breathe, he can still think, he can't see or experience anything around him in the physical world. But if you told him, like, hey, I'm going to try to turn you into gas right now, just be willing.
Except Svetla doesn't have that ability, but...
Well, you know what I'm talking
Aster
about.
Aster has that ability. I know Aster would have to find the ability, or Svetla would have to find... Like, I would have to... I have a druid, so...
Yeah, you would have probably to be, get telepathy. I wonder,
like, if I get permission, and they're, like, I'm, like, tell them what's happening, and then I'm, like, you be open to this and willing,
Yeah, it might be like a cool thing to talk about as like a blanket statement, like, hey, guys, if shit goes down in this specific way, I can fix it, but you have to be open to it when it happens. So like if these things ever happen, think like, yo, I'm cool with this spell happening to change me out.
Yeah. You know? But like if I'm, yeah, but if I can still talk to them because I have Mind Link as one, as my Svetla character, as a rogue, then like we still have a druid in our party. So it would just have to be like, she would have to be carrying that spell.
Yeah. Yep.
She would have to come up with it or something, or we would have to know we were going up against the basilisk, and we would have
which you usually don't, unless I mean, usually you'll get some warning signs of some lifelike statues and stuff like that,
and the stench.
Yeah. Also, it's not instant. Like you, it takes. It's not like you see the gaze in your stone. It takes two turns, three turns.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think it's three.
Yeah, and you can break it. You just have to pass a DC 12 Constitution saving throw, which really isn't that bad.
That's pretty low. That's a good one.
Yeah. You just have real bad luck if you turn into stone, to be honest. Unless you're fighting this at a low level, which you would be most likely.
And that's really like kind of the first layer of defense that a basilisk is going to throw at you.
Yeah.
And like, in my opinion, it's a lot less dangerous than the like proximity poison. You know what I mean? Like if you're within 5 feet of a basilisk maw, no matter how little time, you have to save each time that you're in that, or you can die from poison.
Ooh, scary.
Yeah, that's nasty. Yep.
So these guys, sure, they can turn you into stone, but this is one of the few creatures that we've talked about that can be raised in captivity and domesticated.
See, I've heard like differing opinions about that, actually.
I'm just going off the manual, the monster manual.
Oh, the manual itself has it in there?
Yep. It says a basilisk born and raised in captivity can be domesticated and trained. It also says that basically the owner can teach it to avert its gaze until it wishes it to turn someone to stone, which is a scary ass thing. Not to mention, it's a giant lizard. Can you imagine like a wizard riding on the back of a basilisk, just turning people into stone?
That would be one of the coolest combos, in my opinion.
You know, it would have to be a spellcaster, right?
Yeah, like you get a basilisk to turn everybody to stone, and you just start fireballing the area and just exploding the stones. Ha ha! You can't come back alive. Ha 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 ha!
Yeah,
you are dead.
Another fun fact on the monster manual is the basilisk's gullet, because when a basilisk turns someone into stone, it can it has a strong enough jaw to munch on that stone, and then the fluids contained within its gullet will turn the stone back into the fleshy bits that they were originally. So what that basically means for us, some alchemists can process this gullet and fluid to restore people that have been turned to stone. So even if
it's
don't
like a softening tincture or whatever.
Yeah, and if you have a party that, you know, is not magical, like you're all melee and stuff, that might make sure you get all the bits. You can carry your Loxodon paladin into town and
petrify him.
Yeah, find an alchemist.
I hope the Bear of Holding can hold you, because I don't know if we can carry you.
I don't think so. I'm very heavy, especially if I'm complete stone.
Yeah.
We can find a wagon.
Essie can wild shape.
We'll make Phil pull you. Be fine.
So a basilisk, it has pretty low intelligence, right?
Yeah, they have an intelligence of 2.
Okay.
Which isn't completely bad, but that's right above... That's like the level
of
sentience. We're
talking intelligence score, you know, right?
Yeah, we're talking intelligence score of 2.
Yeah. And like when you were talking about domesticating them, do they have to be raised from an egg?
It's so it talks about the fact that the basilisk eggs are highly prized, so I'm assuming so. And also it says it has to be born and raised in captivity.
So it must, it you must either have to
like you capture, it has to imprint on you.
Yeah, it has to, because otherwise, like, even I don't even think you could capture like a pregnant adult basilisk without just totally destroying your town.
Yeah.
Probably not. You gotta be stealthy as fuck stealing those eggs.
Also, what the fuck are the eggs made out of if that stomach fluid is, like, not seeping into other parts of the... I don't know.
It'd be cool if it were, like, gold or something. Yeah. You know?
You know, I understand the, like, what makes you say that, Dylan.
I know they're not connected, okay? Time, but, like, you know that stuff's... okay, but it's also in their mouth, right? Like, that fluid's got to be getting everywhere.
Well, yeah, but, like, if they lay their eggs...
And then run away.
And then don't drool on them, then they're fine.
I guess that's like, fine. I mean, I know they're not connected. Actually, I don't know that, because these are a made-up thing.
And they have to drool on them.
Oh.
For them to, like, lay, for them to hatch. Maybe that's a thing.
No idea.
Well, the Forgotten Realms wiki... states that their eggs are like flexible, soft, malleable and somewhat stretchy shells, able to be handled and move easily without risk to the gestating creature.
Weird squishy eggs.
Yeah,
I don't like that.
It's pretty common in reptiles. Like snake eggs are very soft. If you were to hold one in your hand, you could I would assume that these are opaque as well.
Yeah. So, well, that's what it was a question. It wasn't a statement.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
Like, they're still opaque, right?
Because I was sure. But that also makes sense, because snakes can, I mean, we have a couple snakes and we feed them like whole mice and, you know, not much is left sometimes.
Flexible.
Yeah. So, like, the bellies can do a lot. So, I mean, I'm assuming that eggs are designed specifically to sit in. Some weird shit, but I don't know where they would
have to decide. Are we talking snakes or lizards here?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, you know, I don't know much about actual lizards in real life and what their eggs are like, but I can assume that they're not too much different.
Similar.
Yeah, like at least in the egg consistency and shape.
Also, we're talking. This is a monstrosity, so whatever that it could be either. I mean, or both.
If I'm DMing. And I want there to be basilisk eggs, although that would be dangerous because my party is ridiculous. I would absolutely make them soft and malleable, but as large as a dwarf.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Give us the option, because Graylin wants a pet basilisk that she can
turn.
You want to pet everything.
Party members to stone. I'm just kidding. I would
but
never.
I think I would also color them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of akin to dragon eggs, but
you're doing five constitution checks every day just not to pop it.
Yeah.
What? I'm just saying, as a DM. That's not official.
Yeah. No, that's a great idea.
That's the thing I sometimes forget when we're talking about creatures this old, because we talk about it a little bit when we're talking about creatures that like are from Gary Gygax, which are still old, but you know they more originate from the creators of D&D. But when you have like these creatures that have been talked about since, what'd you say, 75 AD or whatever?
Yeah, earlier.
So we forget that as a DM, you can be like, I want their eggs to start out malleable, and then as soon as they're laid, they are hard as rock and like weird to the touch. I don't know.
Well,
like,
that would be really cool.
Like as a DM, because that's what I would think that they would like turn kind of hard until they were like ready to be malleable. Anyway, but like there are like we do talk about like what would we change about this monster, but like I feel like this one, it's because there's so many life like realistic things we could base it on and like compare it to. We kind of forget that like but it could be or do anything we want it to be.
Right. This specific monster, along with a few other ones that we've talked about or will talk about, it's kind of a DM's dream.
Yeah, because template.
The very base version in the monster manual is great as like a kind of bigger challenge for a low level party just starting out. But you could beef that shit up, you know what I mean? Easily. And throw in some things that do make sense. Like personally, if I wanted to set up a real good session with a basilisk, I would throw in like an older basilisk in a cave with a couple of little ones and have pack tactics. You know what I mean? Because
yeah.
It would make sense for like smaller, younger versions of the bigger one to follow it or protect it or whatever. And it would be, it's like one of those things where you can easily justify things for a basilisk because you see other monsters that are lizard-like or snake-like in D&D doing similar things. You see other like maybe dragon-like creatures or like armadillo-like creatures even, yeah. You know what I mean? Because like there's a lot of characteristics shared between this monster specifically.
Yeah. And I think the more you know about a monster, like the more information you have with something like this, it almost makes it easier to be like, I want to change this.
Yeah.
I want to make it like this. Because we've had monsters where we're like, oh shit, like, I don't know. Like, what would the answer to this be? Like, let's go figure out, like, because I know someone's answered it, but it's like, we could make an answer up, but because we need like something to go off of, we need to know like if there is an answer out there that like everyone uses. And after we figure that out, if we want the answer to be a different thing,
yeah,
we'll make it a different thing.
I think this is where the questions are answered. You know, I think we are the authority now. No, I'm just kidding.
MWM, the authority on all things monsters.
Yeah, next thing you know, they'll be referencing us in those breakdown videos.
We will be the elders now.
We're the captains now. The basilisks are terrifying. I was reading this thing about this quote that no one carves statues of frightened warriors. So if you see your eyes, if you see one, keep your eyes closed and ears open. Which is strange because I actually just saw a statue of a frightened warrior. So
oh, shit.
I'm going to go open. What was it? Open my eyes and close my ear. Something.
No, the opposite. Oh, the opposite.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm going to go do that real quick and investigate.
Be careful.
All right.
Hey, guys. Welcome back to another middle of another episode. It's always so weird to say. Anyways, thank you so much for listening to our basilisk episode. Scary one. Spooky. Don't run into them. Thank you, as always. Huge shout out to @MizzenCake and @Olava's Cryptid Crafts on Instagram. Check them out. They did our artwork. Maybe they can do yours. And if you want to get a hold of us, you can always reach us at morningswmonsters@gmail.com with all those complaints about a basilisk anatomy because I don't understand it. And maybe you know what's going on, or maybe you just want to hear about a different monster entirely. If you are enjoying these episodes, these little monster breakdowns, deep dives, make sure you tell all your friends. That's how we're going to grow, and hopefully they'll like some of the episodes, even if we don't quite get all of the facts straight. Hey, it's fantasy, right? We can do whatever we want. And on that note, we're going to get back to doing whatever we want right now. Enjoy. All right. Well, I think we got a cut and dry basilisk case here, guys. So I grabbed my bathroom mirror and it's currently on the back of my chair, if you're wondering what that is. So if it breaks into my room, which I don't think it will do, we're good.
Can a basilisk turn itself into stone with its own gaze?
Yeah, sure.
I don't see why not.
That's
interesting.
Like,
I feel like it's Medusa rules.
Yeah.
You know, something we didn't talk about is the multiple sets of eyelids and the way that they can see.
Oh, so maybe not.
Because like if they have one set of eyelids up out of the two, because they have like horizontal and vertical eyelids. If they have only one set up, they can choose to see into either the ethereal or the astral plane.
Huh.
What the fuck?
Which means you could probably get some like good trap laying if you can study from afar a basilisk enough to know like when it might be doing so. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know why it would choose to do it. I can't even fathom like what would be in those realms. Maybe it's just looking for like a planeswalker or something. I don't know. Can't travel
so there. I've been thinking a lot about like that specific, like what are you looking for when you can view into the ethereal plane? Well, yeah. I think that's mostly in place for things that are using things like plane shift, right?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
And, you know, because like, yeah, you can look into the ethereal plane, but you're only looking to a corresponding point of the ethereal plane.
Like where you are,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So like there's got to, you know, you could check and see if there's like some demons that have been watching you or something.
It was my first thought was like he's in battle already and someone plane shifts, like you said.
Yeah,
and he's trying to see if he can find him without, because he won't be able to smell him, right, if it's in a different plane.
No, you cannot.
So yeah, being able to at least see them. And then if this is the thing, because it's low intelligence, it dictates to my brain that like it wouldn't do this, but like it could choose to like be like, okay, he's not here anymore. Flip, is he in the ethereal plane? Flip, is he in the astral plane? And like it, that seems so deep thought to me. But
you just have to blink twice, right?
Purely instinct. Yeah, exactly. It's not really even that much, you know, like thought process.
I definitely think it's more instinctual than anything else.
It's just so much. It's such a complicated way of hunting, in my opinion, especially in comparison to some of the other monsters with this intelligence score that we've talked about. Like, I wouldn't expect even a griffin to be able to do it.
I think it makes sense that they can do it, though, because at the very least, it might be something that we could say was like gathered through evolution. Because as it like interacted with the inhabitants of a fantasy world, i.e. like druids, wizards, all that shit, they probably encountered more people who were like, fuck, plane shift.
Yeah.
Bye. And then they like, so it might be like that kind of situation where it's just like, oh, I have to like be more aware,
and they just
of
adapt.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Also, yes, if a basilisk sees its reflection within 30 feet of it in bright light, it mistakes itself for a rival and targets itself with its gaze.
Oh, so, stupid basilisk!
Yeah, I know.
So I better
all right
turn on the lights because it's kind of dark in here.
Yep, you need bright light.
Friend or foe, and how would you do it? I think this one's like, I mean, you're not going to befriend it, but are you going to raise one from captivity?
Personally, no.
Yeah, no.
Domesticate or foe?
You're playing with fucking fire. Like, it looks up at you like, oh, hello, Papa. And you're petrified.
The only thing that I would ever do in any of my characters' instances is, as Eben, I would cover my eyes and I would try to down it because I'm immune to poison.
Oh, God.
So I can be super close to it, but I would want the like poison glands and some of the like scales and stuff like that, because could you imagine a weird beer that would protect you against petrification or poisoning or something like that, that would, you know, that I could throw around to other people. Like it's nice that I'm immune to poison, but it's also very hard for my party to not be, you know what I mean? It would be it would be fun to know that like these materials could consistently make something very spreadable to my party. But that's about it. I wouldn't want to fight it as Lorne at all.
I'll fight it. I mean,
You would. Of course you would.
I'll fight it as any of my characters, but all of my characters are chaotic.
They would do that.
Yeah, they would fight it, and they would most likely get turned to stone, if we're being honest.
I could see your newest character being really happy about fighting it and whatever.
Yeah, any outcome.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Also, any of it. My newest character would not be a terrified statue. He would be
he would maniacally speak laughing. Lethal. Yeah.
He'd be like, ah, like as he's turning into stone.
And you said you would domesticate it, Melina?
Yeah, I would domesticate it, but I would want to be like a
raise it for good.
No, I would want to be a, I would want to be like a ranger monk who, whether it was an whether it was a accidental thing or a purposeful thing, has no eyes.
Okay.
But has the ability to use like beast sense through their basilisk. Through
your basilisk?
Yeah.
See,
damn.
If I was a DM, the last thing I would ever want would my party to have a basilisk.
Yeah.
Like, that's that's just encounter ending.
Yeah.
Like, every time it's an encounter end.
And, like, if it were, like, early on in my campaign, and instead of my druid being like, I want to look for a puppy, she says, I want to look for eggs. And she rolled the same thing, because she nat 20'd. I would have probably given her a basilisk, but there would have been no pets otherwise. Literally nothing else given. Yeah. You know, because, like, you don't need a goddamn thing after that.
Yeah.
You don't need a basilisk. Like, characters, there's a reason there's no feet for petrifying gaze.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, that, well, we'll save that for the next prompt.
Like, I'm going to say, like, you'd have to, like, burn one of your high-level spell slots to use it or something to balance it. And that's not a thing.
I would honestly make it so that, like, when the basilisk imprints on your party, it forgets that it has a gaze. You know what I mean?
Oof.
Like, it's so, like, used to being, like, a party creature and, like, you know, being taken care of by multiple people that I would just say, okay, so, like, it has all of these other things, the poisonous radius, whatever, but it doesn't have a gaze anymore.
Oh, yeah, or you give it, like, a 1d12 reset, like, amount of something, days.
Yeah, something real long that...
Because it's just boring if you're ending every encounter with it.
It would suck.
But also, at the same time, now that I'm thinking about it, if you're a level 15 party, your enemies are passing DC 12 constitution saves.
Yeah, 100%.
So
that's what I mean. Like,
they are. But I think early on it would be...
Or an interaction. Yeah.
I'm just saying, if someone goes off the rail and you're riding a basilisk through a town, you could petrify all of them.
The whole thing.
Yeah, the entire town. They're all failing those saves. Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying that she would bring her basilisk into town.
Well, where is she going? Can they keep it on the outside? Yeah,
okay. I feel like it would be like a strictly like she would be like a dweller of the forest or like of the caves and mountains kind of thing.
All like right. A solitary creature?
Yeah, like a very solitary
creature. Yeah.
If like you're
a monk turned ranger.
I'd like to use you as a BBG. You
know you're right. The basilisk like, tamer.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Like like one shot campaign.
I like that idea. See that? If you were to homebrew this monster, what would you add or change?
I would give it the ability to shapeshift in the way that it could either use or not use legs.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Mostly because I really do like a basilisk that has legs. I think it's much more terrifying than just a very large king of the snakes with petrify. But I think that the way that it lives, where it lives usually, it would be so beneficial to have an ability where it can like reabsorb its legs into its body or something and be able to tunnel through cave systems or like, you know, go to the Underdark and start fucking shit up there and then come back, you know, and tromps around on the regular ground with its claws.
You know, speaking of legs, D&D loves to slap on 6, 8, 12 legs on these massive creatures, and like, yeah, it's cool in a picture, but that thing walking, just like standard walking around, is an uncomfortable sight to see. Like,
yeah,
anything that requires 8 legs to walk, it looks crazy. It would look crazy using them all in unison. Like,
like, what is it? Like, Appa it from The Last Airbender has like six legs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like you almost never see him walking because it's just too awkward of a thing. Like, you're going to see him flying.
They're going to wriggle like a centipede, and it's a giant lizard. A
giant lizard centipede.
Blah.
Ew.
Just,
no thank you.
Yeah, terrifying.
What about you guys? Any homebrews?
Hell yeah. I want tiered versions. So, like,
cool.
The basilisk is terrifying, right? It could could TPK a party of any level if they all crit fail on their constitution saving throws. That's not enough for me. Raise that DC. Give this guy higher AC. Give him an extra pair of legs. Let's raise that, like, max HP. Give him, like, make him
wings on there.
Like, black and red, glowing eyes, just bigger. Like, let's get
it. Make him dragons.
Yeah. I feel like that's going to be my answer for everything for a while, because there's not that many CR16 things, and I've been complaining about it for weeks.
True.
we need more high tier monsters. D&D probably doesn't monster. Because most campaigns usually, don't get past like level 10 or level 8. Yeah. I don't mind homebrewing everything, but like.
But if you have any homebrews out there you think he should use, Anna, feel free to send them to our email.
Yeah.
Or DM us on Instagram.
Even if they're broken, because I always break them more anyway.
We like broken stuff.
We like breaking each other.
Yeah. I haven't not changed a stat block in weeks.
Same.
I've had to.
Same.
Like,
I have to.
Yep.
Even if it's just upping my AC.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
AC, like, it's HP.
Yeah.
I just throw HP out the door. I have to balance it with you guys.
Yeah,
that's all I want.
And it's more fun when it's not like it.
I don't want
I get
you guys to kill one thing per enemy or per attack. Like, that sucks.
If you're doing 75 damage per round, then we need something with over 100 HP.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The Basilisk only has 52. Yeah.
We're at the point where, like, each character has the possibility of doing, like, 60 damage per round.
Yeah.
So it's like, round, like, five players times like 40 to 60 damage. Because
I think we do average about like 35, 45 damage.
Yeah, you guys almost killed two frog hemoths in one round of initiative.
Yeah.
That's like fucking a lot of, that's like 300 HP.
Yeah, we did so much damage, one of them ran away. So.
Well, you blew it apart with a lightning wand. All right. Melina, anything?
We digress. What? Oh, I would give it, like you said, I would give it a like reset on its petrifications.
Cool.
Okay.
Kind of how
not just always.
Yeah, like not
legendary at least action.
While it's growing. Like
Yeah,
I mean, I would make it, I mean, because it's literally so a part of the basilisk, I wouldn't make it a legendary action because I feel like that's too few, unless it was like
give it an insta kill,
really,
like insta petrify legendary action three times a day.
That would be cool. Not three times, come on.
No,
that's huge.
Yeah, but you still have to fail a save.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's huge.
But
hell yeah, three it's huge.
Is better than none.
There's five people in an average party.
Three is better than unlimited.
But I mean, with legendary action, don't you just have to roll to see if they reset at the top of your turn?
No, it depends on the creature and the ability.
Oh, okay.
Dragon's breath,
Some of them are a day. Okay. Some of them are per round or whatever.
And some of them, some of them, they get all their legendary actions every round. Like Baphomet that I made them fight. He
had every round?
Every round. I don't know if you noticed, but he was taking attacks after every single turn.
Yeah, you didn't notice. I fucking
he was outputting crazy damage. So
it was annoying.
Yes, you were. You killed him.
That's the helpful.
Fuck you, Baphomet.
Yeah. All right.
It's on one.
So we can talk about their alignment, but it is unaligned, which I guess is fine.
I mean,
I think if you typically, I think if they're unaligned, we can pretty much skip over them, especially when they have an intelligence score of 2. I think the shark precedent.
They're not really doing much with like evil intent or selfish intent. They're just doing what they
They're not even seeking things out. Like you go to it.
Chaotic because it just does.
Yeah.
I feel like unaligned is basically just saying chaotic.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, you're
not in a bad way. Just in a like it just does what it does.
Chaos isn't always bad. It's just the opposite of order. Which we know order isn't always good. And
yeah, I'd say your standard in D&D, like most things are chaotic or chaotic good.
Yeah.
Like all players are pretty much chaotic good.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Most of the time. Some they sway towards neutral sometimes. Okay. Then how would you like to see them used in gameplay or media? I got one. I can go first.
Go ahead.
I haven't gone first. In a little while. Okay, so there's this super cool scene. Like fairly early in the anime One Piece, right? Where Zoro, the pirate hunter that uses 3 swords, is fighting this man with the power of wax. And essentially, like, the power can slowly petrify them, but instead of stone, it's wax. And he sees that he's beginning to get petrified, and like, so are like a few other people, and they're all freaking out, and he's like standing there posing, looking badass, and everyone's like, what are you doing? He's like, well, if I'm going to be fucking turned into wax, I'm going to look cool as hell when I, you know, essentially.
Yeah.
And I love that scene because it's super like true to his character and also just hilarious. Mm-hmm. Something I would like to see, you're in a deep within a cave and you see all these statues that are missing limbs, and like it's a clear sign of a basilisk, and then there's just one who's like untouched and he just looks badass, and it was just like some super high level like warrior that failed his constitution saves and fucked up, and he is he still looks so intimidating that the basilisk doesn't even like fuck with that statue.
Nice.
Like maybe he even has like a fucking sword that's so tight in his grip that like, you can't get close to it. And then, if the party frees him, he's like this super badass hero of legend from 1,000 years ago who happened to have like a necklace that allowed him to breathe the whole time.
That would be awesome.
And you just unlock this ancient hero that was forgotten to history and, have him like,
Failed his save.
Yeah, he just failed his save. It happens to the best of us.
Yeah.
kind of thing. Like, if it wasn't for that, he would have killed the guy in like 2 hits. So,
yep.
I think that would be hilarious. And to just have like this man who's separated from like the current times and he's like knows all about like the kings it's from 1,000 years ago. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, That's what I would do with him. I think that's funny.
Fun. Yeah.
Fantasy Captain America. And his name is, what was his name? Yields something?
I don't know.
Oh, the Elder?
Oh, Pliny the Elder?
Yeah. Pliny.
Pliny yeah.
His name is Pliny. Pliny the Basilisk Slayer. And he just he finally failed slaying one of the Basilisks. Yeah, that'd be cool. Like when he pops out, all of his armor is like reflective mirror plates, like he was built to fight the basilisks, but it's just like somehow he just fucked
up.
It was too dark.
I think I would go off of my monk, my eyeless monk ranger in a cave with her basilisk, just like running her own little business. I don't know, just kind of in the forest. I don't know exactly what her deal would be.
You'd be such a good encounter table, like,
crit
one when you're like DMing and she's roaming through the forest wherever your party is. That would be dude. That would be
hunting
dope.
Hunting you.
Yeah, she just kind of lives her life like and travels these like things, but like will fuck anybody up that enters her territory.
Yeah, that's a failed survival check on a day's travel.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure. That and that would be fun because, like Dylan, you were saying earlier, like basilisks don't really seek out trouble. It's usually the opposite. And it would be awesome because, I mean, every DM needs encounters every once in a while. And that would be a real fun potential TPK.
Hell yeah.
I think I would do kind of a lich situation. But instead of a lich, I would use an illithid.
Okay.
Because their psionic ability is like completely active even when petrified. So I would have this like King Illithid, which is kind of an oxymoron in its own right.
But, yeah. I got you. Yeah.
This one that had this terrifying idea because it happened upon an egg on a unwatched, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And it raised this little baby basilisk to be its pet, and through its own like psionic ability, kind of like warped this basilisk's mind, not to turn its gaze on him, but also through the link and the hive mind of the illithid, he chose to kind of like poison the well, as you would say, and get the other illithids to don magical items that would allow them not to breathe, but willingly get turned into stone throughout phases of this like warren underground.
Jeez, and that's scary.
You would have like psionic traps because you would be walking past these petrified statues and you know you're going to face a basilisk sooner or later, but it doesn't even matter because you might not get there. You have every statue. Yeah, every statue with the abilities of the psionic illithid. Yeah,
and they're essentially like, if you don't need verbal or what is it, like some
visual,
yeah,
semantic, yeah,
yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, I think it would be really fun as like a high level challenge because, like you said, a basilisk isn't really for a high level party.
No,
but this could be. You could lay enough groundwork with the backstory of, you know, maybe you find these statues and like they lay dormant in the first leg of the dungeon. Maybe they're the oldest illithids. Maybe they like severed their connection once they turned to stone and they realize like, well, no one's coming and I'm never going to be able to do anything. So fuck it. But the deeper you go, stuff starts to happen and you can't find a source, you know,
like yeah.
Psionic is a pretty rare ability in D&D as like far as things go. And
yeah,
if you are petrified, not showing any movement, not showing any tells, that's going to be,
you're not going to see it coming. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's like a DC 20 arcana check.
Absolutely. You would have to get,
you would even have to
crit.
Yeah. And even if you're rolling, if you roll a 19 or a 25, like, you know, you're only, the most you're going to get out of that is this is most likely a basilisk or some kind of petrifying gaze effect, unless you crit. And then you realize like, these are psionic creatures that are still inside.
Yeah, like, still conscious and being able to willfully do the things you're experiencing.
Oh, that's so
which
cool.
I feel like the only way that you would have had that gotten that information is if someone survived and there was now legend of these creatures.
Yeah, and like, you know, further in, if like I'm thinking of a room where there's like a hexagon pattern of these statues, and like you walk in to the center of the room as a party and collectively have to make an intelligence saving throw, and if you fail you get cast into this nightmare scape where your physical body can't move,
and now you see all the illithids,
yeah, and you go through these like this nightmare history of like the illithids like choosing to stand where they are and be turned into a stone.
Oh my god, so good. But that is a high level challenge.
Yeah, and like I would even go deeper, and like while you're in the dreamscape, if you look upon the basilisk through the history memories of the illithid, you will be turned to stone
shit.
As well.
That's like some Doctor Who shit.
I know, I'm like, you are literally like, you're creating a fantasy, D&D version of the Weeping Angels, literally.
And that's why I thought of it. Yeah,
and that's why I want. I mean, I didn't think about Doctor Who when I was thinking about this, but like,
it goes
now
well.
That I'm yeah now that I'm now that you drew the line, like, that's one of Doctor Who's most like feared enemies of himself.
Uh-huh.
You know, like he's terrified of them, and I can imagine a lot of hubris in a party walking into a cave, you know, seeing statues being like, okay, we're about to fight something like a basilisk, whatever. And really getting thrown for the loop.
And then, next thing you know, you're in a weeping angel hive.
Oh yeah, like, God. Essentially. They can't move or take you or anything, but they will fuck you up. They will.
Hell yeah.
Because there's a lot of stuff that they can do to make you think.
They can make you think
reality is happening. Yeah, like, they change reality for you.
Oof.
So... maybe that'll That's come up.
That's even more terrifying than a weeping angel.
We should do
it'll come up.
I think we should do a weeping angel episode. That would be fun.
That would be fun.
I was thinking we should do some Doctor Who enemies that
that
we
can could possibly
even create stat blocks for.
Yeah.
Oh.
That would be really fun. That would be on
our Instagram.
If I make a weeping angel stat block, it's going to TPK everyone.
Let's try it.
Hell yeah. Well, all right. Nice. I love that idea. We're going to do that.
Yeah.
For our Doctor Who
side mission.
Cuz I'm actually thinking like how my storm rune would benefit the party through that, because I don't have to be like turned away in that instance. Like I can just be kind of like, you know, meditatively seeing stuff.
Okay, last question, because we're running low on time, y'all. What class would you play as this? And Melina, I think you've
had true sight.
Okay, calm down. No, I'm just kidding. No. They basically do. I mean, they can't see invisibility, but they can see into the ethereal astral plane.
I mean, what if someone had true sight looking at the...
Well, I mean, they're seeing the truth, right? So they are truly petrified.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. I'm just curious.
I would have to look up exactly the wording.
Mechanics.
But like if there's something sitting like outside of that plane of existence, manipulating them, then possibly they would see that. Or there's some kind of like, you know, metaphysical conjuration of the history of a basilisk, they might see that depending on how it was set up. But sure. Most likely that is one of the very few instances where you aren't going to gain as much from true sight as you normally would.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
As a class though, I would like to play wizard, like I said before.
Yeah.
Like if Lorne wasn't as smart as he is, he probably would be a good candidate for this, because just the like array of magic he can use being an illusionist is kind of baffling, and it would be a real devastating combo sat atop a basilisk. I have melee protection because it would be like the poison aura, and I obviously wouldn't have the gaze turned towards me. You know what I mean? So like anybody within 30 feet physically or with sight that's more keen than 30 feet, they would have to be, you know, avoiding the petrification more than the stuff that I would do. And that's kind of a mistake on everybody else's part, because, you know, on one turn, I can summon 6 asteroids and shoot 2 of them, and then as a bonus action shoot another 2. So I can target 4 different people in one turn sat atop a basilisk who's you know, simultaneously trying to petrify you and poison you to death.
Yeah, you can't combo spell casting and basilisk and not just get fucked up.
It's nasty.
That's good. I like that. Mm-hmm. It does really lend itself, like, could you imagine a basilisk, like undead basilisk, maybe 2 of them being controlled by a lich? That'd be scary.
Yeah, that's actually terrifying. The train of thought.
Ooh, that basilisk.
Yeah, I went from lich to illithid because I thought, like, dude, if a lich got hold of, like, you know, six full grown, that would be nasty.
That would be real nasty. It would be
nasty.
Yeah.
Horrifying.
I want to make, like, the actual basilisk itself will say that it was, like, given sentience.
Like awakened or something?
Yeah, it was awakened somehow. Mm-hmm. It understands and speaks common. And then it takes a vow as a priest class or a cleric. It takes a vow to never see again, and then wraps a band around its head and becomes a pacifist and only is like a healing, like a healing build, like cleric.
Where, so would you have its poison aura become like a healing aura?
Yeah, like give this thing a lawful good alignment, and he's just like this massive, like, dude wearing like beautifully white robes, like with each little arm standing on two legs with like six arms on either side, and this like crazy looking white bandana covering his eyes, and like a giant golden staff.
I can dig this.
Maybe even like a little silly hat.
For all you artists out there.
Yeah. Just like this terrifying, like, lizard massive creature that can see and it can petrify you, but it's taken a vow of like never seeing again. So it uses like its ethereal sight, I guess, to like make its way around the world in like
that is really cool.
A state of like never really being like being blind, essentially, like almost like echolocation kind of a thing.
It can also like taste the air too, so I'm assuming it would be fine for that.
That would be a crazy ass thing to have in a party, but like he would not ever attack.
No, yeah, he would be dedicated healer only.
Yep.
I feel like he would also present good moral quandaries to the rest of the party. Who, I mean, if you play D&D, you know it's hard to not be a murder hobo.
Yeah, exactly.
And it would be really fun to throw that in the mix.
Yeah, hopefully he's not the last one alive, and he's got a couple.
I mean,
like, I don't know.
Do you think you could do that with like a lizardkin, like homebrew twist race?
Yeah, that was also the other thing was like if you make him a small. Well, he's already a medium. So
yeah,
like,
I mean, it's not that hard of an idea.
Yeah, it could be a thing. And like with
you're a pacifist. We don't have to count into multi-attack. We don't have to count in like your like carrying weight and size usually. You know what I mean? Like you're going to be like those like wandering monks who like shave the pate of their head and like walk barefoot everywhere. Like you just,
and
you go without.
I bet there's like some homebrew classes that are just straight heals, but like out of the canonical like classes, like the closest thing you're getting is what, cleric? And like even them, they're like tanks basically.
Yeah.
And like maybe he is a bit of a tank as far as he can take damage, but he's not going to be on the front lines.
I think I'd homebrew the cleric fit for him too.
It could be, yeah.
I would make him a cleric, but I would give him like a wizard's stat block physically. Ooh. You know what I mean? Like a low AC, a low constitution, because his transformation from like true basilisk into this awakened cleric pacifist basilisk. I would change the poison aura to a healing aura. I would make him fragile. You know what I mean? Instead of
maybe that's his vow, is like he made a pact with a god, and through this pact, as long as he never uses his sight, his aura is now a healing aura.
Yeah, and like you know, when you get if you get bored of the character and you want to see some challenge, you know, like maybe have him like lapse on his vow once. And where like there was like a child in danger, but he was too far away to get there. But if he took off his blindfold and like, you know, turned his gaze on the guy who's like endangering the child, he could save the kid, and maybe he does that. But
could you imagine like playing for a year as this pacifist, and then that situation happens, and then he just and takes off his blindfold, gets on all eight legs, and just
And then all of a sudden, you know, you have your poison aura again. You're big and bulky. You can't stand on your your hind legs. You can't, you know. Your gaze is uncontrollable because you've lived your whole life trying not to do it. Because, like, you know, we know that they can choose to do the gaze. Yeah. So it would be fun to play on that not being a choice.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, you'd have to, like, roll for it.
Yeah, get back in good graces with your god by, like, you know, doing a will saving throw.
I don't think it's called willpower anymore.
I don't know what they would do for that. Like wisdom?
You'd probably do like religion though.
Oh, yeah, that would work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A religion. I'll have to look into what god he would fit into most. That would be cool. Well,
go to whatever pacifist type.
Yeah, I'm assuming there would be a pacifist god.
Huh, that's weird. There's a couple more statues now.
Uh-oh.
Oh, shit.
Are they moving closer?
No, I don't think the statues are moving, but they do look scared.
Oh, good. That's nice.
All right. Well, lovely. I'm going to grab my mirror. If I'm not back next week, I guess come kill the basilisk and harvest its glands so you can save me.
You're still wearing your Cloak of the Manta Ray, right?
I can't take it off now.
That's right.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. It's magically glued to my body.
Make sure you strike a cool pose.
Oh, of course.
All right.
I'll be hopefully in the middle of a killing blow, and I'll get frozen. I'll get frozen with my. I don't have any weapons. I have a slingshot.
Use your chair.
My chair.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just. If you see me in my front lawn with a mirror raised above my head, going to smash a basilisk because I'm dumb and I didn't just use it the proper way, then maybe we'll be back for next week's episode. I think that's going to do it for us today, guys. It's been a good one. I liked this one.
Yeah, this was good.
So
a lot of introspection.
Yeah, and if you guys enjoyed it, drop a like, share, comment, follow, whatever you view us on. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your enemies, only your worst enemies. And if you guys are interested in seeing that Doctor Who spinoff special series, which we're probably going to do anyway because it sounds super cool, let us know if you want that or what you think at morningswmonsters@gmail.com. I think that's going to do it for us today, guys. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.